We start with the Mets and their loss last night. We talked about this to start the show. Just a terrible decision by the Mets to go with Kodai Senga in game one of the NLCS. There was no need for it the way that there was in the division series. He was their best option in the division series. He was not their best option this round, and they paid for it. And with that being said, now we try to look ahead a little bit to game two, whereas I don't think that this is a must win, but it would be very, very, you know, encouraging here if the Mets could get to the Dodgers' bullpen game and have Sean Manaea go out there and dominate. But the Mets have been fine with their backs against the wall all year long. I'm not going to overreact to one bad loss. I still think they'll be okay in this series.
Listen, the Dodgers are better. I think the Dodgers are going to win this series. And you could overreact to the one loss. And there was a lot of ugly elements. You know, obviously, you start with Senga, who just was 5 miles down on the fastball. I don't know what happened. It was velo. Couldn't throw a strike. Mechanically, was a complete mess. With no hitting, Winker with a base running gap. Now, that's the bad news. You guys watched the game, and the Mets looked awful. The good news is they haven't looked like that in a long time. You know, I referenced the game that we went to September 20th, the only game they lost that series to the Phillies. They lost 12-2. All right, it happens. There was one in Seattle at the end of that series where they got knocked around a little bit. But those are the outliers. The Mets have played crisp, fundamentally sound, engaged, productive baseball for a while. I think they bounce back today and certainly have a tight game. I think Manaea is going to pitch well. I do think the Dodgers are better, but I'm not going to overreact to and will advance, but I'm not going to overreact to one sloppy showing, even though it was pretty sloppy.
Yeah, now look, their ace is on the mound going up against the Dodgers bullpen. This is a game where the Mets should have an advantage here. Let's see how it looks, and maybe we feel totally different after game two tonight. Although, even if they do lose, I do feel like the series will look different once it comes back to Citi Field. Obviously, you'd rather split if possible. Hey, Dodgers are on a different level. Oh, no pitching this, no pitching that. They haven't allowed a run in 30-something innings.
33.
They have pitching. So I wouldn't worry about, it's going to be a cakewalk for them. No, this will be their toughest test. You saw a sample of that last night. Mets need to bring their A game tonight with Sean Manaea on the mound. Speaking of the A games, Yankees are going to look to have their A game in game one tonight of the ALCS, BT, taking on the Guardians, a team that I think is more dangerous than people are giving them credit for. Guardians can be tough. They're a good pitching team, especially that bullpen. They play good defense. Their lineup is better than what the Yankees saw in the opponent against Kansas City. Not that it's as deep as the Yankees or some lineup that's going to beat you to death, but they can score more so than the Royals. And Rodon in game one, look, Yankees have to win this series. I don't think it's going to be as easy as everybody thinks.
I don't think it's going to be easy. You know, again, I think that's just lazy analysis. I think, the Yankees, the payroll, this and that, and the Judge and Soto, yeah, they'll beat the Guardians, and I think that they will, but I don't think that they'll beat them easily. You know, the Guardians put some stress on you in terms of some of the team speed they have, bat on ball, and the Yankees have a lot of, at least a couple of players playing out of position. Now, Rizzo, if you guys missed it earlier, free Odyssey app, hit rewind, check it out. But specific to the roster construction, Rizzo in for this round. Now, if he plays, and I guess he will, then he's obviously a very good, highly competent first baseman. But if it's Birdie or Cabrera, both who acquitted themselves very well last round, but they're not natural first basemen. Obviously, Jazz is not a natural third baseman. Wells is decent behind the plate, more for a stick. Judge rates much better in right than he does in center. The analytics back that up. So, you know, as long as Rodon recalibrates how much energy he expends, because I think he just psyched himself out. Like, it was almost like a wrestling approach or a football approach to a game where he wore himself out unnecessarily. We saw with the first batter that he struck out when he walked around them, like he was just breathing heavy, and I like that, but I think it crushed him. I'm probably the last in line to defend Rodon because I think he's had a good season. Not great, good. I don't fully trust him tonight, but the bottom line is the Yanks are going to win. Yanks got to hit, period.
Yeah, Cobb is starting tonight for Cleveland. If the Yankees can't get to him early, and I can't wait to see what their lineup is going to be, whether it's with Rizzo in it, maybe Austin Wells not protecting Aaron Judge, maybe they either move Stanton up or even Rizzo. If he's in there, Yanks need to figure out something. Or Jazz, maybe they figure out a way to move him up, although I know he wasn't hitting really.
I wouldn't justify putting him up there, Jazz. I trust Jazz, but he looked bad the last couple games.
And what about Austin Wells? I mean, he's been bad too, so the Yanks lineup could be interesting to see what Boone does for game one tonight, but that's at the stadium. Catch all the action right here on The Fan with John and Susan. Also, the Giants last night, Sunday Night Football, BT. Again, the Giants defense looked great. Burns was a stud, even without Kayvon Thibodeau. It's almost like Burns was freed up more so for whatever reason. They let him loose. Man, he got after it, and he's getting a Joe Burrow all night. Dexter Lawrence was terrific. Drew Phillips flying around the field. Giants defense played terrific. Giants had a chance to win the game, but yet again, the Giants lost. And to me, it comes down to one thing. Their quarterback just isn't good enough.
You know, it's crazy about Jones. There's certain players that, you know, either just don't have good arms or aren't athletes or don't have the requisite size. The crazy thing about Jones is that, you know, he kind of looks, when you just look at him, looks like he came off that conveyor belt from the quarterback factory. He's big. He's fast. He's strong. He's tough. He's got an above-average fastball. He just can't throw the ball down the field. That's it. Everybody knows it. And when that's a problem, it obviously allows teams to scheme you differently, which takes away other things that would diversify the playbook. The problem for the Giants, they played hard. And on defense, the South said they played great. The kicking issues killed them, just like it did against the Commanders early in the season. But if this was year one of the Daboll era, it might feel a little different. And Daboll's doing a good job keeping them competitive. But because it's year three and they're not scoring, and they're not scoring primarily because of their quarterback, I get that. But it seems like, well, he's an offensive guy. Where's the points? He needs players.
Yeah.
He needs players.
The system is working. There are plays there to be made. The quarterback isn't making those plays, not to mention that they've been without Malik Nabers. I think there's been more good than bad for the Giants through 6 weeks. And if you think about it,
probably
their record should be better than what it is at 2-4, but they've really had one bad game.
Yeah.
And that was the first game that they played against Minnesota, who turned out to be a lot better than what we thought. But that game you take and throw out because they've been pretty consistent since and getting better in a lot of areas since, specifically defense. They could have won some of those games that they lost. Now, they didn't, and eventually Dave was going to have to win those games, but the Giants have been, I thought they've played much better football through the first 6 weeks than what anybody could have expected from them.
I don't really disagree. The only thing that I would monitor, and we'll get this hopefully, you know, Hoff, if you see something on Andrew Thomas, obviously Hoff does the Giants stuff with the broadcast there. I know he's going for an MRI today on his, I believe it's his ankle. Obviously, you guys saw him limping last night. Like, think about what happened last year. As soon as he hurt his hamstring in game one, basically first quarter or second quarter, first half against Dallas, and he lost 40-0. Now, there are other things wrong with the Giants. That changed so much. If Thomas is out for a while, that's going to be a big problem. Hope he's not.
All right, BT. And then from one Sunday night game to the Monday night game now of MetLife, Jets and the Bills, a huge game. AFC East up for grabs in this one here. Bills coming back down to earth a little bit. Jets, obviously, with Olbrich taking over. Downing with the new play caller. We'll see if that breathes some new life into this team. I still think the Bills are just on a different level. Even if they're descending, as you said earlier, coming back down to the pack a little bit, have the Jets climbed up to their level? I'm not buying it. I need to see it. I just think the Bills are a better football team.
The excuses are over. It's not even Halloween, and I don't want to hear another excuse the rest of the year unless Rodgers, God forbid, got hurt for the whole season. That's it. Stop with no. And that, it's time to go. Like tonight, you will get the emotional bump that you generally get when you have a new coach. You hopefully will get a little bit of a, I won't say a schematical bump on offense, but so I'll just go with that just to keep it moving. A different look on offense, and Rodgers needs to play better. You're in your own crib. As disappointing and as deflating as this season has really felt, because they've only played one good game. Even in the other win, they weren't great against Tennessee. They just weren't. Have you seen what Will Levis has done since that game? He's awful. He throws a pick or two literally every single game. It's happened. So they kind of got lucky against the Titans. The Jets have looked very underwhelming, and it's got to end tonight, and I think it does. I think they win, and I think they look like, for the first time all year, a playoff team.
BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Patrick is in Melville. What's up, Patrick?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Great talking to you. Haven't talked to you guys in a while. Hey, I just want to make 2 points, one on the Giants and one on the Jets. The Giants, the record says you are what you say you are. Please stop with the Washington. We couldn't beat Washington. Washington was in the red zone 6 times. And there was a rookie quarterback. If they scored 2 touchdowns, the game would have been a blowout on Washington's side.
Well,
we keep living in Daniel Jones' purgatory. We just keep living in it.
Yep.
We know he's not good. We just keep, these fans keep like, oh, he did something good. Time to move on.
Well, no, but we've been saying that. Daniel Jones, but both things can be true. The Giants have played much better football than a lot of people expected, and their record could be better, and Daniel Jones stinks. Like, both of those things, I think, are true.
And real quick, BT, you know, I know you're a Jets fan, and hey, listen, I wish you could do good, but you guys have hostage syndrome. Literally, Rodgers has not been good in 3 years, and you guys just keep thinking that he's the MVP. He's done. I don't know what you guys, you guys literally are like hostage syndrome, that you think that he's going to be, you start to admire him. I can't. I just don't understand. Like, how could it be? What has he done? He's played more worse than he's played bad.
Well, I'm gonna explain it to you. We have no choice but to believe in him. Now, that's really it. That's the most honest answer. Now, the fact that he looked pretty bad last time out, that's disconcerting. But I will stick by this. I never once said I thought that Rodgers would win the MVP. My point was, if the defense remains where it was a year ago, you know, roughly statistically, you know, in the 3-5-7, somewhere in that neighborhood, one of the better defense in the NFL, which, by the way, it is still, and Rodgers gave you a 15 to 18 to 20%, maybe 25% statistical jump from Zach Wilson and Mike White and all that slop, well, then I could see the Jets being really good. It was never based, because think about how many tight games they lost with those, you know, inferior quarterbacks a year ago. I fully expected Aaron Rodgers to close that gap. I thought Garrett Wilson would look better. I mean, force-feeding him 22 attempts, what? I thought Breece Hall would look better. I thought Rodgers would look better. I thought they'd utilize the tight ends more. I mean, there's a lot of problems with the Jets, but my hope for the Jets was never based on this delusion that I thought Rodgers was a superstar. I know those days are over. Just merely be competent, and the Jets have a chance to be really good.
I did not expect Rodgers to look the way that he did in London.
That was maybe the worst surprise.
I mean, Rodgers.
He also
made
some sick throws, though.
Yeah, well,
he made some. That one in the end zone.
I get it.
That was a foot above the ground. I don't know if anybody. I don't even know if Mahomes is making that.
But he usually does not throw interceptions.
Yep.
That's one thing that I would say. Even if Rodgers can't win the MVP, he's not going to make stupid mistakes and bad throws. He threw three interceptions in one game.
That's fair. I'm not defending that he was awful.
He just doesn't do that.
You have to say that's the outlier. And if it's not, then they're absolutely cooked in the season. Over. There's nothing to talk about.
That's exactly right. If that's not the outlier,
it's over. Then that's the case.
Mike is calling from Manalapan. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I was just wondering, I'm a big Mets fan, following everything. Just wanted to see, you were saying at the top of the hour that the Dodgers bullpen might not be as good of a competition against the Mets with Manaea on the mound. What are the weaknesses that you see with the Dodger bullpen, and how do you see the Mets?
No, just a bullpen.
I'm hoping they come through.
Meaning a bullpen game. The Dodgers
bullpen
are going.
Bullpen game for the Dodgers. Yeah.
The Dodgers are going with a bullpen game against an ace. Do you need me to really explain that to you? How many pitchers are they going to use versus the Mets ace? That's a matchup you take every day of the week. I don't care how good their bullpen is.
I'm just nervous about the scoreless streak. The Padres couldn't score against them. They looked really, really hot in games one.
Oh, what are they going to have? Are they going to have a 50-inning scoreless streak? I mean, I understand.
Or Hershiser pretty much did back in the day. You never know.
Right, but it wasn't a bullpen guy.
I know.
So that's
yeah,
like.
Yeah, one guy could be a little bit
correct.
Off. No, but I tell you, 33, there's some crazy stats in baseball, really. But the last time this happened was 1966 with the Baltimore Orioles pitching staff.
What I want to know is how come people have been saying the Dodgers have no pitching?
Starting pitching.
How Flaherty looked last night. Like, think about it, too. You know, other teams at the deadline could have went out there and got Flaherty.
No, Yankees were going to.
I know,
they were worried about
it.
His bulky back. Right. And, you know, they turned it down.
And the Dodgers did it. And guess what? That's why you do it. One game, game one of the NLCS. I know what he did in the first round. It was obviously not very good, but a guy like that, it's why I was talking about this yesterday before the game, BT. I don't care that they haven't performed up to their standards. Yamamoto, Flaherty, and Walker Buehler are dangerous. Those are guys.
It's a good word.
They've done it before, which means they can find it in all it takes is one game in the postseason. And if they are like that for one game, you're screwed. To whereas the Mets maybe don't have those horses with that pedigree. And yes, they've pitched better than those guys more recently, but still, at any moment, Jack Flaherty could do what he did yesterday. Is Luis Severino going to do that?
He could.
Is Kodai Senga going to do that?
No,
he didn't do that. I mean, but Senga.
Severino could.
Point
Senga's
is,
not.
Those guys, well, I mean, we need Manaea. You got to see Manaea go out there and do it today.
You have great faith?
But to answer, yeah,
tonight?
I do.
Great
in Manaea.
Faith, Manaea.
Yeah, I mean, but this is going to be a difficult task. This lineup is absolutely loaded.
It's
so
good.
But yes, I do. I trust Sean Manaea to
I
be.
I think you should, too.
But
I agree.
Okay, so then, like, we went into it. Yesterday I was talking about Senga. Somebody called and said, I said, Senga's got to do his job. And they said, well, what's Senga doing his job? I said, all right, 4 innings, 2 runs. If he goes 3 innings, 1 run, something like that. Three innings, 1 run, 4 innings, 2 runs. Obviously, he didn't do his job. Not even close to that. So if I say, what's Manaea tonight? I'd say 7 innings. 3 runs or fewer. Against this team, you'd have to
take that now. Yeah. I really thought 4 innings for Senga would be ambitious no matter what, just given the sheer pitch, like the volume.
Right.
Like, say if you have one rough inning, it's like, you know, 20. Now you're lucky if you get three. You might be back on that two-inning track like he was in Philly. And it just makes it tough. But no, Manaea has been great since the changes, and he's got to remain great.
Yeah.
Manaea.
But to answer the question specifically, the Mets have their ace, and they're facing a bullpen game. A bullpen game should favor the offense.
Like, yeah, no, it should.
I know that
but
other teams
against the Padres. Yeah, that's what's so weird about baseball.
Well, we'll see. I mean, at some point, the Dodgers are somebody's going to break through and score some runs. Like, odds are. And the more pitchers you use, more likely that one of those, let's say four, is not going to have it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Just based on the sheer math. I mean, somebody's mechanics are out of whack for a day, or, you know, his secondary pitch doesn't feel right translating from the bullpen to the mound. You're probably right, but the fact that they bagged game one. I mean, you win or lose, but I guess I shouldn't get wrapped up in the aesthetics, but it just felt, like the Mets were outclassed.
Yeah. It was.
Like they were. Well, they were outclassed, but it feels like they could be outclassed the rest of this series. I don't know if they will, but it feels like they could.
New York sports at an all-time high, BT. You got the Mets and Yanks in the championship series. Giants Sunday Night Football last night, even with the loss, but at least looking better. Their defense looks legit. Jets Monday Night Football, a huge game against the Bills. As we said, we got both the Yanks game later on tonight. You get the Mets this afternoon. Yankees game two tomorrow as well. You mentioned it before that there was split decision with the Yanks as far as going with Carlos Rodon in game one tonight. I don't trust Rodon at all. I understand why they would go him in game one. But I feel like Clark Schmidt is the better pitcher. What was your gut here on what you would have done as far as having game one tonight at the stadium? Who do you want on the mound?
See, here's the thing. If you're going to remain married to the numbers, that Rodon's much more effective in the Bronx than elsewhere. And despite what happened the other night, that's true. And the splits favor the Bronx. If you're going to remain connected to that, which I think organizationally that's maybe where the debate came in, I get it, because if you want to do that, then you're like, all right, Rodon, home or away? Well, all right, let's go with him home again. Now, if we don't pitch Rodon in game one, if we do go with Schmidt in game one, say at the other side of the room won the debate, and then went with Schmidt game one, unless you pitch Rodon in game two to remain married to that Bronx, you know, favorable analytical stuff, you're not pitching Gerrit Cole in the first two games. There's no chance that that's happening.
Right.
So if you basically, it's this. If you want Rodon to pitch in the Bronx, it had to be game one.
Okay, I'm just trying, now we look ahead here. So we know it's Rodon game one tonight at the stadium. Can't wait. Place is going to be.
Oh, my, it's going
to
be insane.
I went to game two against Kansas City, and it was the words I used to describe it were ferocious roar.
Yeah,
when Rodon,
when
he struck out the side there.
Yeah.
It was different. I felt like Citi Field was very loud and good throughout, but the Yankee fan, it just felt.
A little different edge?
It felt,
wow.
There was a little bit. I would probably say Citi was louder, I think, throughout and maybe more excited.
More
now,
Robins, by the way, to celebrate. Home runs and grand slam.
I was going to say, by the way, game two was a loss, but that roar that I heard in the beginning, I'm expecting more of that tonight. I'm not going to go tonight because with the Mets and Jets, but tomorrow, I know maybe both of us try to be in the building.
I might be going tomorrow.
I'm excited about the Yanks and to feel that crowd. Anyway, we look ahead here. So let's say today's Monday and it's game one. Tuesday, so Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So it would be Rodon on normal rest in Cleveland for game five. Remember, that's another element here. I guess either way you look at it, unless you were pushing Rodon back to
four. Which I have no problem
with. Yeah, well, me neither. So that's the question.
Maybe that was the debate.
Do you want Rodon starting twice and one on the road in a game five? Or
I didn't want him starting game five in the Bronx. If there was a game five, I was saying maybe it should. No, Luis Gil's definitely going to game four.
Correct.
They've announced
that. That's what I'm saying. But if Rodon went four, you can go Schmidt one, or even you could have gone Gil one, I guess. But say Schmidt one.
Cole two.
And then Gil three.
Correct.
Because now you
and then back to Cole? Well, or that at that point.
No, you push Rodon.
Yep.
And then you're back to the top again. Now, Cole, let's see. So Cole's going to pitch tomorrow.
Yeah.
So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Right. So Sunday would be his normal day. There is no day. So Cole's going to get game six. Again, he's going 2-6.
No chance he can get game five if they had to?
No, because it's Saturday. That's true. You're going to pitch him on 3 days rest?
If he was pitching tonight, he would be able to get back.
Yeah, well, that's,
that.
No, you can't, so that's my point.
Mess around with
that, no. So your game one starter, now Rodon, is going to go game five in Cleveland.
Well, the good news is that the Yankees bullpen is fully rested.
Right.
I mean, they are ready to come out and just be a massive weapon tonight.
Would you trust Clark Schmidt in Game 5 or Rodon?
Schmidt.
And that's the point.
No hesitation.
So then, like, tonight is different. Tonight at the stadium, it's like, all right, flip a coin. We should be okay with Rodon.
We'd be fine with Schmidt. We get 15 outs whatever. If we have to and hopefully win 6-5.
But by starting him, Rodon, tonight,
yeah.
You're now pretty much locking him in to Game 5. I mean, it's either that or Marcus Stroman who's on the roster.
I was going to ask you, Stroman is on the roster. There's no, I mean, given Luis Gil the ball in Game 3 and he hasn't pitched, Game 4.
Game 4, yeah.
And he hasn't pitched at all. I mean, would they do the same with Stroman?
No, I think Rodon. I think once you make that decision, he's got to get another start.
I tend to agree.
I mean, Stroman's going to be the long guy. If Rodon gets lit up in two innings, maybe Stroman comes in and settles things down.
That's possible.
Similar to what the Mets have with Senga / Peterson.
But what do you think the real debate was? Was it going, because I don't, unless there's somebody standing up in that room saying, to hell with the analytics. Did you see him the other night in the Bronx, guys?
Yeah.
Like, if somebody actually stood up and projected it that way, hey, stop being married to the numbers. Who are our best pitchers? Who do we want pitching?
Well, initially,
did somebody have the stones to do that? I don't know.
Initially, I thought they were just trying to have him at home. But the more I think about it, that should take less priority over who's going to be starting Game 5.
It should, but I don't know if it does for them.
Now, the other...
Because it didn't in the previous round.
The other factor, and I guarantee you this played a part of it as well, Clark Schmidt would be going in Game 7.
Yeah.
Right, so you project it forward. Cole can go Game 6. Not going to go Game 5. He's going to go Game 6. I mean, I guess theoretically you could push him back, but you're not going to do that.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah, so you're going to have Clark Schmidt in Games 3 and Game 7. Game 3 and 7.
I was trying to see if it could possibly work out. Like, if Heal was dominant in Game 4, but then he's only, and that's a Friday. Saturday, Sunday, Monday. No, that would be on 3 days rest. They're not going to do that.
Schmidt would be normal rest in Game 7.
Yep.
So that, I guarantee you, was the other side of it. They valued, all right, it's either Schmidt for 1-5 or 3-7.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you get Rodon a home game, Game 5 less important as opposed to 7 in case it goes that way, and also project forward too with the World Series, although I guess with the days off, they should have, in theory, plenty of time to line up Garrett Cole anyway for Game 1.
They should.
So I mean, listen, wouldn't be saving Schmidt.
I'm sorry, Sal. We make this easy. It's not.
Yeah.
It's a lot of play here.
And then matchups and analytics. I'm sure those are things that we don't get into. But either way, I would expect the stadium to be on fire tonight. Now, you were at the last ALCS. Which game did you go to? Game 3?
Saturday. What game was that? I guess that would have been Game 3.
Which was the first home game.
It's awful.
I know they were down 0-2, but
terrible.
Still. It's going to be different.
Did they get shut out? I don't even know if there was a run. Now that I think about it, I think they didn't even score.
But even coming back home down 0-2, it's ALCS. You'd think it's more fired up, and it wasn't.
There was no juice.
This is going to be different.
It's the opposite of this year. People think, see, last year you went because you hope, and, you know, hey, you're still going to a league championship series game. There's a lot worse things to do in the world than that. But I had a lot of company. I had no conviction that that team was going to do anything. It was maybe if they get lucky. You know, you steal a little magic here. This year is totally different. I expect the Yankees to get to the World Series, though I do expect the Guardians to push and they present some issues. I expect the Yankees to win.
I think it's going to be a good, long series. Yeah, I mean, listen, unless the Yankees play at their peak, if the Yankees play their best, then they will dispose of the Guardians in 5 or so games.
Well, I want to ask you this. What's more likely, or in order of how you view it?
Yeah.
Yankees in a quick series, Yanks in a short one.
Like short by you mean 5 or less?
Or yeah, 5 or 4 fewer? Or 5. Yeah,
okay.
So Yankees in a deep one, Yanks in a short one, Guardians, I think Guardians, I'll just finish the thought.
Yeah.
Guardians in a deep one, Guardians in a short one. The only thing that I really don't see happening is the Guardians in a short one. I think everything else is kind of on the table.
Right.
But I would probably say, I think I'm leading more Yankees in a short one.
Like,
I think the Yankees
like
are going to play. Yeah. I think the Yankees are going to play well.
Yeah, I'm going to go.
I do.
I'm going to go longer series.
Yankees.
No, I think Cleveland.
Look at this guy.
I just don't think that it's as easy as every. Now again, the Yankees, based on the way the Yankees are playing, if they play the way they played against the Royals, they will get beat in this series. Now, is it possible that they played better than the way they played against the Royals? Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's the caveat.
They'll see worse starting pitching, that's for sure.
Correct. Well, that's the other thing. So then, if they see the worst starting pitching and the offense gets going, then all of a sudden I could see a scenario where the Yankees win in 5,
mm-hmm.
maybe 6 games, take out Cleveland. But if the Yankees play the way that they've played a lot of part of the regular season and the way that they played against the Royals, that's where I think that they're vulnerable.
Unless Judge is superhuman.
You know, but again,
he hasn't shown that
so
yet.
So those are, you know, it depends on how they, like, yeah, anything could happen. But based on the way that they played against the Royals and the way that I've seen them be inconsistent, I think they could get beat here. And I do think too many people, myself included, going into the postseason, the Yankees going to the World Series. It's just the way the path is, whatever. They're going to sweep the Royals. And then watching the Royal Series, even though they took them out in four, it was still discouraging. So can they raise their level? I think they're going to have to raise their level of play if they want to get to the World Series, and I'm not so sure that they will.
Did you see the Fox pregame with Big Papi, A-Rod, and
not
obviously
much
Jeets?
Of it, no.
Okay. Jeter said something. Now, we know Derek's history. He doesn't take anything for granted. I was surprised he went here. He actually said on the air, he said, this is actually easy for the Yankees. Like, I was so surprised because he's always on guard against...
What, this series he meant?
Meaning, hey, got lucky. Nothing else could go your way. Basically saying you have to win. Yeah, I was surprised. It was very candid, and I kind of agree.
I mean, we
but that's never been Jeter's M.O. I take anything for granted, Derek.
Did you watch any of Cleveland and Detroit?
Very
game five?
No.
I watched some of it. I think they're going to be a problem.
Well, they hit Schuble, which was interesting.
Okay, so that's the start. But also the energy. I didn't know that their closer, Class A, I know how good he is.
Yep.
He comes out to the Wild thing.
I know, but the Yankees touched him up once this year.
Yeah, I remember.
But he's filthy, man.
And their bullpen in general, and that place.
Ain't the Bronx. It's a good place.
Yeah,
ain't here.
Understood. I mean, the Royals won a game here.
Yeah, right.
I think they're going to be more dangerous than I initially thought. I think this will be, like, everybody was worried about Houston, and understandably so. I think this is the toughest challenge that they will face and that they could have faced in general.
What if the Tigers would have won Saturday 3-2 and Schuble's got two starts at a potential 7-game series? You're not saying what you're saying now?
I still think Cleveland. Because all they had... Like,
you thought the Yankees... Then you would say the Yankees have an easy time with Detroit.
Yes, I do. Okay. And I think
I can understand that difference.
I think a five-game series first round with Detroit, I think the Yankees
that's
could
problem.
Have... Yes, that would have been a tougher challenge. But I do think Cleveland's going to be an issue here for the Yanks. Chris is calling from Kingston. What's up, Chris?
How you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, BT, did you see yesterday's exchange with Rick Brunson and Steve Ascenso?
I was watching it live. Amazingly, it's preseason hoops. We're going to actually get to that a little bit later. I did see it. That was I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that. That was nuts.
It's not like a regular season game, not a preseason, but. So anyway, so I think the Mets are in trouble. I think this is the Dodgers' year, and what I find amazing is that Glasnow and Ohtani hasn't pitched. You know, they're not even pitching the postseason, and they're going to be back next season, and they're doing all that without really depth starting pitching, and it just goes to show how their offense is from top to bottom so much better than what the Mets have faced so far this postseason, and their bullpen is just on fire right now. I just think they're playing with the edge right now, and I think they're going straight through the playoffs.
Dodgers look different. I mean, and it's one game. And so, listen, they didn't really slap around the Padres to that score. So, listen, but I think the Phillies lineup is good.
Yeah,
I do.
It's not as good as the Dodgers.
I mean, the Dodgers are good.
Another level. Let me just say this, though. As much as I hated the Senga decision and then his performance and then the way that the Mets looked last night, it's very easy to get caught up in the moment. And it's not even just overreacting to a game because it's not just that. If this were a bad loss against a team that you really truly felt the Mets were better than, it'd be like, all right, it happened, you move on. The problem is that the Dodgers are built to be a World Series champion.
Mm-hmm.
The Mets were not. They're not built on that level. They've had a terrific season. They've had some good pieces. But the reality is that they don't have enough to compete with the Dodgers, in theory, on paper. Then you see what happened in the game. So it's not just an overreaction. But let me remind you, these things change quickly. It's one game. All of a sudden, the Mets go out there today, and Manaea shuts them down, and Alonso hits a two-run homer, and Lindor gets on base and is driving and runs. Like, you start to say, oh, yeah, this is why I believed in the Mets.
Mm-hmm.
It can change like that. Or the Dodgers' bats go cold. Like, the Dodgers did lose a couple of games to the Padres. They can be beat, too. So it's not – yesterday was the perfect storm of uh-oh. And it could continue today. We don't know. But it also, let's not go nuts and just lose all hope and belief. The Mets are set up nicely here and still have a chance, even if they lost this game, to come back home and still fight in this series. And minimum win 2 out of 3 at home, which I think they would do. Now, going back to L.A. and having to win 6 and 7, you don't want to be in that spot. But point is, it was as bad as it gets last night. could change quickly today.
They've earned the benefit of the doubt that they will find the way to piece something together. I feel like that's a stretch because I just really think the Dodgers are a lot better. But you got to keep some oxygen in their lungs because they just haven't been snuffed out despite having 10,000 chances to get snuffed out.
You think Nimmo's going to hit?
In the series in totality? No.
He's going to have to, right. Okay, do you think Alonso's going to hit?
Maybe one or two home runs, but not the present. No, not.
Right, so that, and the reason why I ask that is, that's, to me, I understand why you feel that way. That's going to be the difference.
Yep.
I think the other guys will do, whether it's Lindor, or Vientos, the other guys in the lineup, Manaea, Seve, Quintana, like the bullpen, they'll do pretty much what we expect. The difference in this series may be if Nimmo and Alonso hit like the guys that they're being paid to be, like the 3-4 hitter. If they produce at that level and can match the Dodgers' offensive output early on, that, I think, is where the difference comes. One thing we haven't touched on, Dante DiVincenzo and the Knicks' little issue yesterday at the Garden.
That was odd. So it all started when he was taking it to the, and you could tell he was playing with great energy for a preseason game. Understandably so. Randall did not dress, in case you guys were curious. But
I threw it on for a couple of seconds myself because it was in a dead spot kind of before.
6 o'clock. Before
the Mets and before the Giants. And I was like, he happened to stumble across it. Okay, I'll take it.
I was bummed. I'm all in on the Knicks. Yep. Even when they're awful, I watch them. So I'm always watched. I've never stopped. I didn't know if it was a 5 o'clock game, six. I'm like, well, I checked the guide, six. I'm like, all right, I'm going to record this. I had a couple things to do. Got home from a baseball tournament, whatever. Catch up on some of the football. Once the Dallas score got off the rails like it did with Detroit, I'm like, all right, now I'm going to go watch the first half of the Knicks. Not the whole game, first half, and then get into the Mets and obviously into the Giants. So DiVincenzo goes to the rim, gets fouled, goes to the line. And at first I thought he was kidding. And I don't know, but he said something clearly Tom Thibodeau.
Right.
He's like something about like, oh, I can't take it to the hole.
Right, how you finish.
How about how you finish.
Right.
And then he said, we all believe to Tom Thibodeau, hey, that's what happens when you get that control. And you can tell that, at least by facial expression, I didn't think he was joking around. I didn't. And I rewound it and I listened. I'm like, that definitely sounds like it's toward Tom Thibodeau. Now, after the game, that's where it got really juicy. Because for some crazy reason, Jalen Brunson's dad was involved, which is just ridiculous. No coach should ever be involved in that stuff, especially when your son, it's his best friend. He was the best man at their wedding. So Jalen tried to defuse that. You can actually hear Dante telling Jalen, I said fibs, like, hey, I wasn't talking to your pops. I guess for some reason your pops thinks I'm talking to him. And then, like, you know, it was defused, and they'll sort this out, I guess, but Brunson made a little run at him, like he could, like, stepped toward him and was looking to aggressively continue the conversation, which I don't know why. I don't know what Rick Brunson was doing last night, but that's out of his lane. You're an assistant coach. Stay in your lane.
Right, but so there's conflicting things here. Did you read Steph Bonnie? I thought he had the best take of it of the post. Okay, so he said that DiVincenzo was joking about the finish stuff.
Which it didn't sound like he was joking. I don't believe that.
Well, DiVincenzo said that he was joking about the
finish. He also lied and said, I never said Tom Thibodeau. You could hear in the audio, he clearly said fibs.
All right, he said he didn't say anything about the trade, though.
No, I believe that.
Okay, and then when he did say that second part of it, which was saying something like, that's what happens when they let you make decisions, that he said he was not talking to Tibbs.
I know.
Which I believe.
Go ahead. So you think he's talking to Brunson?
100%.
What do you think the implication is? You think that Jalen Brunson's dad wanted Dante DiVincenzo off the team?
Yes. Now that doesn't make any sense. Maybe he was the one who wanted to push the trade for Cole Anthony Towns. What I find fascinating.
Rick Brunson's got no juice with with the Knicks.
I mean, does he not?
His son's the
guy. Here's what I find fascinating about this whole thing. That DiVincenzo was a groomsman in Jalen Brunson's wedding.
I know.
So like,
I think he was his best man.
Okay,
well, not even a groomsman.
So that
he
said, "That's my guy." But the relationship with his father basically is a different relationship, which I just don't understand. Like, out of respect for your best friend's father,
yes,
or vice versa,
or the other way too.
Out of respect for your son's best friend,
What
the hell are these two guys doing?
I don't know. It's still very convoluted to take a definitive side, but I got to be honest. I like Rick Brunson, but I love his son. I'm on Team Dante here. I can't have an assistant coach aggressively gesturing and moving towards a player. Now, it never looked like it was going to morph into a fight, thankfully, but Rick was out of his lane.
He should have. This is a quote from DiVincenzo. My relationship with Jalen, that's my brother and my best friend. Yep. That's a separate relationship. I'll talk about that privately and figure everything out. But it is what it is. So clearly there's some kind of issue.
He thinks Rick got him traded, which there's no way that happened.
Or that Rick, and maybe Rick was hard on him. Remember, he is a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because of their relationship, meaning DiVincenzo and Jalen Brunson, maybe he can go at Rick the way that he wouldn't a normal coach.
Almost like his own dad? I know what you're saying.
And maybe Rick was hard on DiVincenzo, and DiVincenzo ain't taking anybody's, which is why we love him.
No, I love Dante
DiVincenzo. Ain't taking anybody's crowd. I know you missed that attitude.
I wish he was still on the team. I'm going to really it really hit me the other night. Like,
easy.
I
even watched, you don't want to mess with that, dude.
I love him. I even watched a little bit, like very little, the previous game, which I think was the Wizards game, just to check in, pick and roll, Carl and Brun from the new pieces, Bridges, obviously. I knew he wasn't on the team, but when I'm like, man, there's no Dante. Like, Dante DiVincenzo is going to be missed. Knicks are going to be really good, but it feels almost unfair that he doesn't get to continue this journey.
What about how Jalen handles this? Like, I felt it was weird for him standing there and kind of just watching this and trying to figure out maybe what they were saying to each other, but it was such a weird encounter. If it were coach versus player, whatever, that happens all the time.
It shouldn't, though. Coach got to stay in his lane.
Yeah, understood, but it does happen. Coach versus player, whatever. Especially a guy like DiVincenzo who's fiery and upset.
And Rick's fiery. Rick was a fiery type.
Fair enough. But when you have the dynamic of, they're best friends.
I know.
That's his father. Like, well, what the hell?
You and I have joked that we're still, unfortunately, Sal's dad passed away. You don't know.
He's dead. It's okay. I mean, it is what it is.
I know
you're trying to be nice, and I appreciate that.
But our dad's very similar. Right. My dad's alive, thank God, healthy, and 80, early 80s, playing golf, whatever. But to this day, I'm still a little afraid of him. As crazy as that sounds.
That's why
I say that. It's very similar as we share stories on the air and off. But I can promise you, as much as I'm still a little fearful and very respectful of my dad, if my dad was respecting one of my best friends, I would put my dad in his place.
If you were disrespecting one of your best friends.
100%.
Yeah,
100%.
That's what I mean. So
like
from
that.
Brunson.
No, that's not, we're not, that's not that. Stop.
Yeah, walk away and
stop.
Or vice versa. Like,
and by the way, my dad would never do that, but
understood.
I wouldn't let it happen.
Or even if it were your best friend saying something, you'd be like, if
it was my best friend to my dad, I think I'd be even more aggressive.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And Brunson's just like, huh?
I know.
The whole thing was there. That was just bizarre. Anyway, I'm excited for the Knicks.
They're gonna be good, man.
Is it next week? Yeah, week from tomorrow.
9 days, I think.
October 22nd in Boston, if I'm not mistaken.
In Boston, they are going to be good.
BT and Sal on the Fan Play. Add that to the level of New York sports talk around here. We can't get enough of it. You got the Yankees tonight, game one out at the stadium. Carlos Rodon goes for the Yanks as they look to get back to their first World Series since 2009. You get the Mets coming up at 4 o'clock as well in game two. Jets, Bills, Monday Night Football. We're talking about it when we come back. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal on the